Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
It's Mentally Yours for Melon and Yvette. Focus on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours.
Hi everyone and welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's mental health podcast. Today I'm joined by Faye McGuinness. She's the head of workplace wellbeing programmes at Mind and also the lead of mental health partnership Our Frontline. I'm going to be finding out what Our Frontline is and how it supports people who work in healthcare and education.
So Mind are here to make sure that anybody with a mental health problem gets the help and support that they need. And we have a goal of supporting 1 million people to have good mental health at work by 2021. So I work in the team that oversees all of the work that we do to work with employers to ensure that they are prioritising workplace mental health.
That must be really interesting at the moment, in particular with all the changes going on in terms of the way people are working.
Yeah, absolutely. We knew that before COVID, there was already a crisis in terms of workplace mental health. We knew that the cost of poor mental health at work to employers was around £45 billion every year. And we knew that around 300,000 people were falling out of work because of poor mental health. So before COVID hit, we were already seeing an issue in relation to workplace mental health. But many employers were starting to really prioritise it and understand that actually prioritising workplace mental health was good for business. And then when COVID hit, obviously, employers and employees see themselves facing a completely new situation, new ways of working in terms of people being remote, working from home, kind of losing that face-to-face contact, being out of the office environment. And for many people, you know, that way of working has seen significant impact on their mental health in terms of that feeling of isolation, that feeling of burnout, not being able to kind of balance that work-life balance. So yes, we've seen a real impact on people's mental health as a result of that, particularly in the working world.
Could we just go back to the start of what you said there, because that's all really interesting. But you started off sort of saying that before sort of the corona crisis, there was also a crisis just in workplace mental health. What was causing that?
So we know that there are many factors causing poor mental health at work. So there are a range of things that we hear from employees. So for many people, there's a kind of stigma that still exists in the workplace. So many people feeling like they're unable to be honest about their mental health and open about them maybe not feeling at their best. So we know that stigma is still a massive cause of people not getting the right support at work. But there's been a huge amount of work done over the past the past years through the work that Mind and Time to Change have been doing as part of their partnership with Rethink Mental Illness to really tackle stigma, particularly in the workplace. So stigma has been a real issue. But we also know that for many people, that kind of culture of working in an environment where they feel like they're maybe not able to get the right support for their mental health, whether that's through their line manager, whether that's through their kind of HR teams, or that kind of lack of trust in being able to kind of reach out for support to those people in their organisation where they might be able to turn to if they felt they could trust people more. So we see that real issue in terms of that kind of culture piece and that kind of lack of trust in terms of reaching out for support. But also we know that there are many drivers impacting people's mental health in the workplace. So we hear about kind of long working hours, organisational pressures, lack of flexibility, lack of work-life balance. So all of those things that we know can drive mental health in the workplace. And I think, you know, for many years we've spoken about health and safety, but the reality is that we've really spoken about the safety side of health and safety. And I always talk about the fact that, you know, if you were in the office and, you know, there was a hole on the floor and you fell down and you broke your leg, then your employer would absolutely make sure that that hole was covered up and that you couldn't fall down and break your leg again. But we don't necessarily do that for mental health. And we really do need to work towards creating psychologically safe working environments where people feel like their mental health is prioritised.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. What are your thoughts about how we can bring about genuine change? The reason being I'm asking is just sort of for my own sort of working life, I've been through different situations. And it feels sort of like it's sort of potluck, really. You know, one place you might get a really supportive manager who's really open-minded and sort of knowledgeable about mental health stuff. Somewhere else you might get someone who's really not so flexible. And what we're getting at the moment, I think, is a lot of sort of businesses might sort of do a hashtag when it's sort of World Mental Health Day. They might sort of pay lip service to supporting people with mental health issues. But when it actually comes to practically supporting people pretty much every day across the board, it's really not done so much. So what sort of advice can you give?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I start by saying that we have seen many organisations take some great strides, but we still have a very long way to go. And so something that we launched back in September last year actually was something called the Mental Health at Work Commitment. And that commitment is a set of six standards that we recommend all employers sign up to as the first steps to prioritising workplace mental health. And so what we do with that commitment is we really look at how you tackle the causes of poor mental health at work, how you promote wellbeing for everybody, and how you provide support for people that have mental health problems. So actually, you're covering the whole spectrum in terms of the early intervention and prevention side of things, but also making sure that you're providing the right support for your employees should they need it. So we've got over 500 organisations that have signed up to that commitment so far, which is really positive, but we really are encouraging more employers to sign up to that. So, you know, like you say, we've seen many employers for many years do what we would call the low-hanging fruit, you know, some awareness raising over here, some training over here. But what we want employers to fundamentally think about is how they can better design work for good mental health. And that will take time, that takes culture change, that takes some tough conversations, that takes listening to people that have, you know, mental health problems and hearing about their experiences in the workplace. But actually, you know, you can start with those small steps, sign up to the commitment. It's a really good framework for employers to sign up to. And what we're asking employers to do is just to start that journey. But it's also really important to make sure that you're providing support for people that are experiencing poor mental health who might be struggling. And that's really what we're trying to do with the Our Frontline campaign that we launched in April this year, particularly to support those on the front line in response to the coronavirus, because having that support for the people that need it when they need it is absolutely vital.
Thanks for mentioning that. So tell us more about that. So it's a partnership, isn't it, Our Frontline?
Absolutely. So it's a partnership between Samaritans, Mind, Shout and Hospice UK with support from the Royal Foundation of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. And we launched it in April to provide round-the-clock one-to-one support and online mental health and bereavement resources to frontline workers and key workers. And really, we did that because we felt that the strength of us coming together as charities meant that we could do more. And we recognise that these are groups of people, particularly those in our NHS or in our social care, that were already facing really challenging roles and really challenging experiences. So we knew immediately that the coronavirus and the work that they were doing to really tackle that was going to have an impact on their mental health. So we've been providing support through ourfrontline.org, and we've been providing toolkits and resources that are tailored to each of those audiences, but also providing the opportunity for people to text or call and speak to a trained volunteer for a conversation about the things that they might be experiencing at any time of the day.
Because I mean, a lot of those jobs are, you know, stressful at the best of times, but during the pandemic, I mean, I can only imagine how difficult it must be, especially sort of if you're working in A&E or, well, I mean, any of the key workers, it's been really difficult. What are the key things you're doing to support them?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you say, there are many kind of things that are impacting on their mental health during this time. And some of the kind of themes that we've seen is around this kind of feeling of, again, stigma. I go back to that point, this kind of feeling of self-stigma in those workforces, that they're there to support people. You know, they're there to help people. So this idea that they can't then reach out for help and support if they need it. And actually what we've seen is with the kind of hero narrative that's been promoted, which, you know, has been intended to communicate the value in which we hold those sort of healthcare professionals, could also be putting their mental health at risk, because, you know, that kind of language of hero means that if you're a hero, can you really reach out for support? So the kind of stigma piece has been really important. And what our frontline has been able to do through its kind of campaigning and messaging is to really say to people on the frontline and our key workers that it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to reach out for support should you need that support. And that's been a really vital part of the campaign. And I think that's why we've seen such success in people kind of reaching out and wanting to kind of connect with the campaign. So as I say, we've been providing kind of information and resources. We've been providing tech support. We've been providing phone support all through our front line. And recently, we've also bolstered the trauma counselling to health and social care and other emergency services staff so that they can actually access that when they're ready to do so. And we've also been awarded some funding to support those on in our emergency services, so those working in our police, our fire and our ambulance services, because we recognise the impact on the work that they do as well.
It's really interesting what you said in there about sort of the pressure of being a hero. That never really occurred to me, you know, when we were all clapping for the NHS and sort of thinking, oh, what a wonderful job they're doing. I mean, because I've never worked in that role, I've never sort of been sort of that side of the fence. But I guess that is an added sort of pressure to maybe feel like you have to be perfect. You have to be sort of, nothing can go wrong with you. You know, you have to keep going. That must be a huge pressure on people, their mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw that already in this kind of workforce, particularly in health and social care. You know, this idea that you are the carers, you know, you work for the NHS, you're there to care for patients. So we'd already seen that people, you know, in those workforces struggled sometimes to think about their own mental health or prioritise their own mental health, which is completely understandable. And we understand that. But actually, you know, the kind of hero narrative, and while we understand that it was done from a place of, you know, care for people in those workforces, it can kind of add to that stigma that people can't reach out for support. And actually this feeling that if you're there to support other people and get them through the crisis, if you're the hero in the situation, then how can you possibly ask for help and support? And so the work that we're doing through our frontline is really reminding people that it is okay not to be okay. It's okay to reach out for that support. And I think the real positives of our frontline being delivered by the partners is that it is outside of people's own organisations, because often when you're feeling that self-stigma, you're less likely to reach out for support within your own organisation, because you might have that fear that, you know, other people might find out, or it's not going to be confidential. So the beauty of our frontline is that it is a confidential service and people can reach out 24 hours a day should they need that support.
Brilliant. Could you talk me through, basically pretend I was somebody who's a key worker and I've rung up or I've texted, what actually happens?
Yeah, so if you're depending on whether you're texting, which is sort of led by Shout, or the call service, which is called by Samaritans. So you'll be greeted by a volunteer, and the volunteer will just ask you some kind of questions. And I think it's really important to say that, you know, the services are confidential. It's not about prodding people. It's about allowing people the space for them to bring what they need to bring to the conversation. So there are some kind of questions that are asked by the volunteers just to get a bit more of an understanding of the kind of issues or problems the person's faced. So each call will be tailored to that individual, obviously. So some of the kind of things that we've been seeing or hearing, particularly through the Shout text line, is this feeling of people feeling exhausted, people feeling like they need to express their anger or frustration, so seeing it as an outlet for some of the issues that they're facing. But we've also been speaking to people that are having lots of sleep difficulties, such as insomnia and nightmares as well, and really saying that they're finding it difficult to adjust to the kind of new post-lockdown arrangements. So they're kind of some of the themes that we're seeing come out. So what we've got is we've got those kind of volunteers and professionals at the end of the phone that are able to kind of talk people through their experiences, help normalise some of those experiences, and recognise that there are probably many people feeling similar, you know, similar things. And then also provide information of where people might be able to go on and get further support. Because obviously these services are there for people that phone that might be feeling like they're in crisis. But it's really about making sure that they've got somebody to listen to, and to make sure that we can then signpost people on to the right support should they need it.
Because I imagine in a lot of these professions, whether it's the NHS or the police or the ambulance or whatever, it might be sort of harder to have those conversations within the people that you work with, or even your friends perhaps. So it's specifically when you're chatting to somebody, is it sort of a general expert, or is it somebody who will have worked in that field?
Yep, so it will be a sort of a range of people. So it might not necessarily be a general expert, but it will be somebody that will have experience in mental health, somebody who has experience in trauma, and somebody that has experience in obviously listening and talking to people in the context of mental health problems. And I think when we first set up our frontline in April, it was very much that kind of immediate response. So we wanted to make sure that we had people on the phone ready to talk to those calling up. But actually, as we've moved with the campaign and kind of thinking about the future of the campaign, what we really want to make sure that we're doing is we want to help frontline workers acknowledge what they've experienced, identify their stage of recovery, so where they're at, and then get them the support that they need. And so I think that's really important. And I think, you know, we're really trying to kind of manage the campaign amongst all of the kind of different situations that we find ourselves in. So obviously, you know, we've got these local lockdown situations currently happening at the moment. So we're really focusing on how we can support those frontline workers in those particular areas as well. So as you can imagine, you know, there's lots that we're learning through this work, and we're continuously trying to make sure that the information we provide and the advice that we're providing is really responding to kind of the different situations and the uniqueness of the situations that people are finding themselves in.
Yeah, absolutely, because it does need to be really quick and responsive these days, because as you said, you have different sort of areas of the country suddenly having to go into lockdown, and so people might go from being sort of reasonably sort of okay one day to sort of really sort of stressed and sort of up against it and dealing with all kinds of challenges the next. It's really hard, isn't it? What advice would you give to people working on the front line in these sectors at present, in general, in terms of looking after their mental health day to day?
Absolutely. So I think what we recognise with many of these, many of the employees working in these workforces, is that the idea of self-care can feel very difficult for them. So we completely understand that. But actually, it is about allowing some time for them to think about what is good for themselves and what they need to do to look after themselves. So we have something that we call a wellbeing action plan. And we recommend that everybody completes one of those wellbeing action plans. And what it does is it gets you to think about the small things that you could do to look after your own mental health and wellbeing. But it also enables you to think about some of the signs that you might start to display if you're not feeling at your best. And we recommend that if you trust a colleague or your line manager or somebody that you work with to kind of share that information, so that they're able to kind of spot those signs and they're able to see maybe if you are struggling as well. So being able to do some kind of focus on self-care is very, very important. I think it's also really important for you to know where you can access that support if you feel ready to reach out for it. So for some people, you know, they can talk to their family and friends, but for many, they don't want to feel that burden. So knowing that there is something like Our Frontline if you need it, and just making sure that you have access to that information should you need to reach out, I think is really, really important. And I think, you know, I think what we're going to see over the coming months is kind of an increase in people kind of starting to experience the impact of the trauma that they've been through. We're probably going to see an increased risk of PTSD. And actually, we need to make sure that the right services are there to support those frontline workers in managing and dealing with that. And I think one of the other things that we're really going to see a lot of is this kind of idea of moral distress and moral injury, which is essentially defined as the kind of distress caused by actions or inactions which violate an individual's moral code. And whilst that's not a mental health problem in itself, it actually is a risk factor for a range of mental health problems, including things like depression and PTSD. And if you think about these workers, they've had to make some really, really tough decisions over the past 6 months. And some of them may have gone against their moral code. You know, it's not necessarily decisions they might have wanted to make outside of this COVID situation. So we really do need to keep an eye on these workers in terms of the kind of impact of trauma and that increased risk of PTSD, and make sure that the right services are there when they need them to support them for that.
I mean, it does sound sort of quite worrying, but I mean, as you sort of said with your plans, forewarned is forearmed, really, isn't it? Hopefully, if people can think about this stuff sooner rather than later. I mean, it must be such a difficult job for all the people working in this section. What can family and friends do to support them when they're sort of doing their work, or just generally?
Yeah, so I think there is a role there for family and friends in being able to listen. And I think we can't underestimate the power of listening. I think it's really important that friends and family are armed also with signposting information. So, you know, knowing who the kind of GP is, knowing that things like Our Frontline exist, so that if they are worried about a family or a friend, that they can sort of say to them or suggest maybe that they could be signposted for support. I think, you know, it's a lot of pressure on family and friends who, you know, obviously feel worried for their loved ones. Them themselves are dealing with the coronavirus situation. So we have lots of information on the Mind website about how you as a family and friend member might be able to support somebody that's maybe A, struggling at the moment, or experiencing a mental health problem. So I'd recommend family and friends go and look at that information online, because there's some really helpful tips about what you can do, how you can start a conversation. But I think also it's really important for family and friends to know that, you know, it's not their job to be mental health professionals, but what they can do is they can listen and they can signpost, and they will know the people that you know, that they're either married to or their parents to or their friends with better than anybody. So they might be able to spot those signs earlier on. So keep an eye out for those signs and make sure you're armed with that signpost information.
Do you have any advice for listeners as well in general, sort of whatever they do in terms of a job, in terms of looking after their mental health at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's fair to say that collectively we have all felt a kind of level of anxiousness about this current situation. You know, there's been a lot of unknowns, there's been a lot of worries. And so I think, you know, that feeling initially that we kind of all in this together was quite nice, in the sense that actually it brought that togetherness. But I think as we move through this, you know, the individual impact on people is different. You know, everybody is facing, you know, their own situations. Everyone's living situation is different. Everybody's health conditions are, you know, so we're all kind of facing that uniqueness in the way that we're feeling. So I think for us, there's something about people being able to identify the things that might trigger them in terms of their mental health. So again, going back to that idea of self-care and those well-being action plans, we often talk about them in a work context, but why are we not as individuals thinking about what they look like for us? So I, you know, we'd recommend that everybody kind of has a well-being action plan, that everybody is able to start to think about the triggers that they might face in terms of their mental health. But then also on the flip side of that, thinking about the things that keep you well. So, you know, as an individual, what have the things that you've done over the past 6 months or even before that to kind of look after your mental health and well-being, and think about how you can incorporate those into your kind of daily routine to make sure that you're able to prioritize mental health as well as all of the other things that we're facing at the moment. I think also it's really important that know that there is information and support out there. So, you know, we have at Mind, we have the Mind Info Line. We have a whole coronavirus hub on our website so that people can reach out if they need information. You know, if they're a parent and they need to know how to talk about to their child about coronavirus, there's lots of information there. So reach out to those kind of organisations, reach out to Mind, Samaritan, Shout, Hospice UK, and make sure you're making the best use of the services that they're providing. And I think the last thing that I would say is that we just all need to be kind to ourselves. We need to recognise that this is a really tricky time and it is having an impact on the nation's mental health. You know, Mind did a coronavirus survey with over 16,000 people, and we know that the coronavirus is having a negative impact on people's mental health. But now really is the time to be kind to ourselves and to really think about the things that we can do in our daily lives to keep us well.
So this is goodbye from Mentally Yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores. From mentally yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed today, please contact the Samaritans on 116 123 or go to their website at samaritans.org.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rate or review. 5 stars would be lovely. Also, if you've enjoyed this, come and have a chat to us on Facebook. We've got a group called Mentally Yours. Also, we have a Twitter, which is Mentally YRS. See you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.